Eat Drink Indiana Radio is powered by EatDrinkIndy.com, where Central Indiana turns to learn about food from farm to fork and drink from grains to glass.
Welcome to You Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD to the Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. This week on You Drink Indiana Radio, we are looking back at the Taste of Elegance Chef's Competition, which was held earlier this week. We are looking forward to Mardi Gras food, and in between we'll meet a local photographer who seems to be everywhere. We'll talk to Taste of Elegance winner Dean Sample, the executive chef at the Meridian Restaurant and Bar in Indianapolis. We'll talk with Amy Pozak, whose photos and column run in local publications by Current Publishing. And we'll talk to Becky and Teresa Borrell, two members of the family behind Borrell's Cajun and Creole Cookery in Indianapolis. So stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Local chefs enter a lot of competitions. Some are casual, like the Super Bowls event coming up January 30th at Second Helpings, where for a $10 ticket, attendees can vote on their favorite chef-made soup. Others are more elaborate, like the Taste of Elegance event held this past week at the Indiana Roof Ballroom. For this event, sponsored by Indiana Pork, chefs competed for the top spot in a variety of categories to win the Chef Par Excellence designation and a trip to Napa, California. Dean Sample, executive chef at Meridian Restaurant and Bar, won the Taste of Elegance, and I talked with him about the dish he made that wowed the judges and how an idea for a dish comes together.
It was a grilled sausage with a glazed pork shoulder, a little bit of fried pig ear, sauerkraut that we had made. I'd added some fennel to it as well, radish, pineapple, and a miso aioli.
Now, it won you were the chef par excellence, you won the wine pairing, you won the people's choice. So this really appealed across the board. So why do you think that is?
Well, for me personally, I try to kind of develop dishes that I myself, as far as when I was a kid growing up, I try to do a lot of familiar things to people. And then on top of that, I just try to introduce new flavors or kind of do a different kind of spin on a classic sort of thing. So I think a lot of times a lot of people can relate to it, and it's still exciting. So it's not, you don't really scare people away so much.
And, well, some of the flavors at events like that where chefs are being very creative, some of them can get a little unfamiliar. Mm-hmm. But I think this was really appealing, you know, on a lot of different levels. What's it like in one of those competitions? You know, how do they work?
Well, this being the third year doing this particular competition, for me personally, it's a lot of fun. You get to see and work with chefs that you never get to work with or see because everyone's at the restaurant. So it's always fun to see, you know, your, you know, acquaintances or, you know, friends or whatever it may be, competition, if you want to look at it that way. But it's really great as far as working with other people. It, you know, obviously there's that element of excitement or, you know, fear maybe, you know.
Is it stressful? I don't know how it is sort of the backstage and in the kitchen area, but there, you know, I always wonder, you know, if there's a lot of stress involved in getting a dish put together just right before a judging.
I'm always pretty laid back until it comes to actual plating. Then it gets like a little stressful. That's about the only point in time I'm ever going to yell or anything, but I don't normally do that. But yeah, it could be stressful if there's people crowding you or something, but no, it's usually a pretty relaxed atmosphere.
Well, it's very fun, and you know, people get a chance to taste samples of all the competitors' dishes. Did you hear any responses from people? You know, from when people were going through the tasting and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, definitely. You know, obviously they're going to tell me about my dish in particular for the most part, but yeah, I mean, it's for me personally, it was all positive feedback, and a lot of people, like I said, they kind of have that familiarity, like, oh, I love sausage, and then they try it, and they're like, oh, that tastes amazing, you know, what is in this, or what's in your sauce, or why pineapple, you know?
Well, we were talking about that, you know, why pineapple, you know, on top of a dish like that. So, I mean, how do you answer people when they ask those kind of questions?
Sure. Well, like I said before, here at Meridian, the restaurant, I do another dish with pineapple with pork belly and shrimp, and it's like in a pork broth. And my thought behind doing it was, is with our pork belly, we cure it and we smoke it and sear it, and it kind of takes on a flavor of like ham. So growing up, something we always had was ham and pineapple. And ever since I've done that dish, it's kind of always been a flavor affinity for me, and always, you know, always was. But for that particular dish, you have such a rich dish, and the sauerkraut had the sour and the spice from the sausage and the sauce. So I really wanted to add a sweet element. And to me, pineapple is a great pairing with pork and a great pairing with wine for that matter. So
now you also won the wine pairing portion of the competition. How is that? Is that difficult to pair, the choices of wine you have, which is a limited amount of Indiana wines. Is it difficult to pair that with the dish that you've created?
The most difficult thing is they give you, they tell you maybe a week in advance what they are, and you don't necessarily get the opportunity to try them, because if you waited around, like, oh, you get this wine in, it'd probably already get taken up. So for me, the dish had kind of evolved around kind of the Alsace region of France with the sauerkraut. It's called en croûte garni. It was kind of my idea for it. And the thing that's traditionally paired with that is a Riesling. So when I looked into the wines that they were offering, I was looking something similar to a Riesling. Black Hawk Winery had a wine that had this sort of flavor notes in their notes that I was looking for, and I looked into it, and the grape variety they use was in relation to the Riesling. So I was like, well, this would be a perfect pairing, and it, you know, it worked out. So
now, how do you develop, you know, your flavors, you know, your sort of go-to palate? How do you kind of come up with those favorite flavors that find their way into your food?
Well, for me personally, being loving food and all that, when I come up with a dish, I try to like the idea of trying to hit like every kind of flavor. With my dish, I try to do something, you know, something a little with a little spice, something a little sour, a little sweet, like umami, if you want to call it that, you know, and, you know, have something rich, something tart. So it all kind of hits all those notes and hopefully has a good balance.
Now, you mentioned a sort of Asian, you know, flair and some Asian flavors that you really like. How does that come about? You know, how do you develop your favorite flavors?
Sure. Well, I kind of wrestled with the idea of being kind of from a very farmer country kind of background, that I was like a little hesitant of doing Asian food. That being said, I mean, I definitely eat it. I definitely cook it normally at the restaurant, but you want to try to be true to who you are and true to yourself. And for me, I wanted to do a classic dish that I kind of grew up eating with, you know, sausage and sauerkraut, but I wanted to kind of add those Asian flavors. So for me, with the Asian flavors, it's kind of been, since I've grown up and become a chef and tried new things, I've started to really like, you know, like the miso and the different kinds of chilies and lemongrass and ginger, which aren't things I ever grew up with. But since I've had them, you know, obviously I truly love those flavors, and I just knew that it would be a great pairing with the sausage. So
now the Taste of Elegance is a pork competition sponsored by Indiana Pork. When you create a dish, do you typically have the idea for the dish, or is it built around an ingredient or a concept or a something you've had somewhere else? How does any dish develop?
I guess for me, a lot of times what I think of is the protein first, which obviously this one would have been pork. But, you know, I liked the idea of doing sausage, and that was one of the one things I really wanted to base it around. And for me, I guess, once I knew sausage, the first thing I always think of, sauerkraut. And I thought with the Asian flavors, I was with the Korean chilies, it was like, well, like, you know, it's kind of like kimchi, you know, they're similar, you know, obviously there's different flavors in there definitely. But, so I kind of thought of the idea around the whole dish was like, oh, this seems weird being with, you know, kind of German style sauerkraut, but all the other flavors, if I would have put them into the sauerkraut, it pretty much would have been kimchi. So I was like, you know, I think it'll work well.
Now, what if someone just said, you know, here's a here's an ingredient. You know, where do you start? Sometimes we do a segment here on the radio program, Cook This, where I just, you know, present somebody with an ingredient and say, here, what would you do with it? Mm-hmm. How does your brain work when you start to think of how to use something?
Well, for me, as long as I know what it is, I try to go with familiarity. So a lot of times when anything like that runs in my mind, I just start making kind of a mental list of everything that I know that pairs well with that. And then you also think of the preparation of things, you know, if, you know, say it was an apple or whatever it may be, you know, you just have 100 things you can think of your mind that go with apple. And then I usually try to, once I figure out another ingredient, I think about that ingredient, what goes well with it. And I think that's a lot of times you kind of see, where did this idea come from? And that's usually where it comes from, is that one thing stems from another, that, and they all kind of work well together in one way or another.
We've been talking with Dean Sample, executive chef at Meridian Restaurant and Bar in Indianapolis. Stay with us for more from Dean here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Indiana Radio, we tend to follow along with what our local chefs are doing. We try to keep up with new menus and keep track of new restaurant openings, but mostly we try to get to know the city's chefs so that diners are more familiar with who's in the kitchen cooking at their favorite restaurants. This week, we've been talking with Dean Sample, executive chef at Meridian Restaurant Bar in Indianapolis. The restaurant, historic building, is the former Dodds Townhouse on North Meridian Street, and Dean tells us how he came to be the chef at Meridian, where he grew up, and some of his favorite flavors. You're a very young chef, an executive chef here at the Meridian in Indianapolis. Tell me about how that came about.
Well, I worked here with the first chef that was here, Dan Dunville. He hired me. And kind of when he kind of decided to leave, I actually told the second who became the chef here, Layton Roberts, I was working for him as well at Mesh, and I told him that Dan was leaving here. And Layton immediately applied for the job, you know, liking the restaurant and everything. And once he came over here, I started working over here full time. Eventually became the sous chef. And then, you know, I just worked and tried to help him out as much as I could. And I had left briefly and worked at Oakley's, helped him out for a while. And when Layton decided to leave here, they called me back and offered me the job. So just got lucky.
Well, now tell me how old you are.
I'm 26.
So that's very young. Yeah, for
when
chef.
I started, yeah.
So you were a 24-year-old executive chef. That's pretty young.
Yeah.
How is it? Do you feel how did you come up through the ranks? I mean, did you go to culinary school and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I went to the Art Institute of Indianapolis. Coming up through the ranks, honestly, it all happened more quickly than I anticipated. I never thought that wasn't my intentions. It just, I got lucky, I guess, or maybe I just worked hard enough to get it. I like to think that, you know, but yeah.
Now you've talked about your background kind of as a farm kid. Do you come from Indiana?
Yeah, I'm from a tiny town called Paragon, which is just north of Gosport. I went to Martinsville High School. So, yeah.
Now, is it interesting growing up, you know, coming from a sort of a, you know, rural background, you know, and you mentioned never having had those ingredients when you were growing up. Goodness knows, my mom never cooked with things like lemongrass or basil or anything like that. How was that, you know, making the transition from, you know, from that kind of palate to a chef's palate?
Well, you know, some people, they have things to disagree with or whatever. For me, it was amazing because it was just like trying something you never had before, and it's still amazing to do that now. But just to try something you never had before, to me, it was just like, you know, so eye-opening, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, did you have favorite things growing up, you know, favorite dishes that you still cook or that you don't ever cook anymore?
Huh. Well, don't ever cook anymore. I don't ever make, like, hamburger helper anymore, but
was convenience foods like that, you know, on your plate when you were a kid?
When my mom cooked, yes. My grandma, she went all out every day, but yeah, as far as if my mom was cooking, it was usually ground beef of some kind, you know. She worked full time and everything.
Oh, sure.
So,
well, that's the thing, you know, people work, you know, it's looking for something, you know, quick on the table. You know, I grew up with meatloaf and macaroni and cheese and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, I definitely still love all those things for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, do you have favorites that you tend to go to today that you know people you know see on your menu, influences people see on your menu, or things that you especially like?
Yeah. I mean, I know some things you could even say are even most cliche for city people, but I still love sushi. I remember when I was, you know, 16, first time I had sushi, and I was like, oh, this is amazing. So, I mean, as far as like, you know, kind of branching out from, you know, like my grandmother would never eat raw fish or something, you know, but for me personally, just like Thai food, Korean food, I really enjoy ethnic food for sure. Yeah.
Now, any of those possibilities available when you were a kid?
Other than the takeout Chinese restaurant, which is phenomenal, but no, never. You know, I grew up close to Bloomington, but as far as like as a child, my family never went there. But once I got to be out on my own, I went to every single one I could.
I think that's neat. I like the way people, you know, discover, you know, the world of food out there, because so many of us, you know, didn't grow up, you know, having a very adventuresome, you know, meal on the table.
Yeah.
So it's kind of fun to see where people go. Now we were talking about wine pairings earlier. You know, you won the wine pairing portion of the Taste of Elegance, as well as the Chef par excellence and the People's Choice. So talk a little bit about wine pairings.
We'll sit down and we'll try the wine. I try not to read the notes or even kind of ask other people's opinions. I try to develop my own opinion and then get other people's opinion on it. And that's kind of how I personally like to develop a wine around a dish or vice versa with a dish with wine. So I try to kind of look for all those notes. I try to think about the richness of the wine, the body of it, the acidity amount, the alcohol amount even sometimes plays into effect. And I guess you just kind of, for me personally, I just try to think of what would pair well to this flavor component, or what would mask it, or it would enhance it, you know.
Yeah. Do you have, you know, influences, you know, in the wider culinary world? Do you have, you know, chefs that you look to for inspiration, or restaurants you particularly like, you know, in other places?
Yeah, I really kind of enjoy what's going on in like the southern part of the, you know, of the country, which, you know, it's the way they do things is kind of similar to how I grew up. So it's fun to kind of see the way that they're interpretation on kind of classic dishes, which I would never consider myself southern, but like you said, I'm pretty country, so you know there's similarities there. And I really enjoy kind of seeing, you know, I can look at a dish and kind of figure out what their inspiration was for, and that's really exciting for me. It's, you know, you almost feel like you've figured them out or something. So I like that.
So tell me a little bit about that. So you say you taste, you know, someone's someone's cornbread or something, you know, and are you, you know, you taste for certain aspects in it, like, you know, a jalapeno or something, which would never have been in my mom's cornbread, but you see it in other people's cornbread.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know in Indiana and like, you know, a lot of people, you know, like Standard Oster, so a lot of people put sugar in their cornbread here. And for me personally, I like that. I definitely don't put as much as my grandmother did, but, for me, like, with cornbread, I always add a little bit to it. And I know in the South, they tend not to do that. We also tend to add a little more flour than they typically do in the South. And, you know, but that being said, I mean, in my family, we had rolls, biscuits, or cornbread of my grandmother for, you know, every meal.
Isn't it interesting that she was making that, you know, for every meal?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, my grandpa, you know, they always make jokes about it, but like even when they had spaghetti, they ate mashed potatoes or french fries or something. So, you know, for me personally, we'd have like eight starches for every meal. So, you know, I never thought it was odd until people told me it was, but.
That's right. People who have noodles on top of their mashed potatoes with their gravy, yeah, and that sort of thing. That.
Yeah. I definitely do that.
So are there any foods of this area of Indiana that you think are particularly of the Midwest? I've been trying to sort of get an idea of what, you know, Midwestern food really is. You know, anything that really seems Indiana?
For me personally, and growing up with the kind of background I had, I mean, persimmons to me, like, I had no idea that there was Asian persimmons, you know. And we had, you know, persimmon pudding growing up. Sorghum, which, funny enough, I've kind of looked into, is actually from India, and, you know, other places grow it, but, you know, my grandma always made sorghum cookies growing up, and, You know, I think a lot of that kind of German Dutch influence is still very much so prominent here, which I personally find really interesting. And I've even, with my grandma that's still alive, I told her that, oh, I love German food. And she told me before, she was like, what's the difference between German food and American food? They're the same thing. I'm like, no, they are for you. They're not that way for everybody, you know? So, you know, that to me personally, that those kind of German inspired things, and you get a little bit of kind of that South almost a little bit in Indiana, at least where I grew up. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like a mesh between kind of German and Irish and kind of that South kind of, for, you know, farming communities, you get a lot of that.
We've been talking with Dean Sample, executive chef at Meridian Restaurant and Bar in Indianapolis. For more information on the restaurant, go to Meridian on Meridian.com. Follow along with the conversations on my Facebook page, especially when the topics veer to local events, you'll probably notice posts from Amy Pozek. The local photographer and columnist for Current Publishing seems to be everywhere for her Where's Amy column. For example, she attended the Fantastic Food Fest last weekend and got plenty of photos with celebs like Ted Allen and L'Oreal Gavin, as well as some of our local food artisans. I sat down recently with Amy to hear about what she's up to and where the job takes her. Tell me a little bit about what you do, you know, as a photographer and columnist, because I think people probably see you around town a lot.
Well, that is true. I have fun. I actually go to different events all over Indianapolis, Carmel, Zionsville, Fisher's Geist, you know, all the area. And I just go and I'll take photos of certain events, arts related, food related, what have you. And I just take pictures and meet a lot of different people. And that's where Amy's at. A lot of people go, where's Amy? Oh, there's Amy.
Because that's what the column is, where's Amy? So they get to follow along and see where you've been and what you're up to.
Exactly. As a matter of fact, when I was just at the Fantastic Food Festival, I had talked to Ted Allen, who was there, who is a Carmel native or went to Carmel High School. And it was really funny because he had signed my book, I Found Amy, which I thought was really fun. And people were laughing at that.
I love that. So the Fantastic Food Fest, it was just last weekend at the State Fairgrounds. That's an example of some place that people would see you, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I had a ball there. I mean, it was so much fun. Not only did I get to see you, somebody that I admire and love so much and respect, but it was fun just to see a variety of people that were foodies, people that were just there interested in maybe becoming a chef or they love cooking. And it was fun to meet all the different chefs. And yeah, it was a ball. It was a great event for Indianapolis.
There seemed to be a lot of vendors there, you know, a lot of our local artisans, you know, food artisans, as well as, you know, the couple of the TV chefs, you know, Hugh Atchison was there, L'Oreal Gavin, the Butcher Babe, you know, we had Sabrina, who is our little Rachel Ray's Kids Cook-Off contestant, so she was there too. So I think it was a fun event. Did you feel like, you know, that people seemed to be enjoying it? You know, were there a lot of people there when you were there?
When I was there, there were a lot of people. I think a lot of people really wanted to see Ted Allen and the other chefs that were there. That I tell you, that Butcher Babe, she was so funny and so sweet. I just loved her. And I love it when you meet somebody that's a celebrity and they're just so generous and they're so nice. And it seems like they love their fans and they want to be there, which to me is really important. It makes you even want to follow them even more. But yeah, I found that there was a lot of people there. And it was interesting to me because people were there. I'd ask people, like, what brought you here? And they're like, oh, I want to try. I heard there's a really good, you know, peanut butter place, or, you know, or I want to try pizza. I want to do this or this, along without, you know, meeting the chef. So yeah, I just, like I said, it was, I even met a couple from Chicago that drove all the way from Chicago, and they spent the whole day there, and they were so excited that they said that they enjoyed it so much they were going to come back Sunday. So I just enjoy going to things, events like that, and I had fun.
Now, do people tend to come up and want to talk to you and find out where you've been, where you're going next, that sort of thing?
Well, they do. It depends on what I'm doing and where I'm at. But I've been so fortunate that a lot of people do follow where I go, whether it be an arts event or a food event or something even political. So, yes, a lot of times people always say, hey, where's Amy? Or they'll call me. I think, too, a lot of times because I am a photographer, I'll be taking photos. And, you know, a lot of people are just curious of what I'm taking. And it is kind of funny. A lot of times I'll be taking, I might have a really great celebrity in front of me and I'll be taking like the money shot, the perfect shot. And then all of a sudden all these other people run over there with their cell phones and they're taking the same shot. And I'm like, oh no. But anyways, it's interesting, but it's fun.
Now, when you go to events like that, you know, how do you go about shooting them? One of my challenges is going to events is that I always seem to get the backs of people as they're walking through places. You know, if you go to a big event at the fairgrounds, the home show or the flower and patio show, it's just lots of either people's backs or the crowds of people. Any tips on shooting events like that?
Well, I do think there's probably a couple. One, you have to get in good with the people that are there. But no, I mean, I think a lot of times, at least with my camera, it's also matters with the lens. So lens make a difference if you can zoom up on somebody. A lot of times there's angles. Like, for instance, when I was at the food festival, I was sitting in front row and I had great view of everybody. But then Julia Moffat for Channel 13, she was there and she was walking around to the audience. I thought, I got to go get some pictures. So, you know, I got up and I went around and then I was kind of interested. I found some different angles. So sometimes it's really smart if you're a photographer, you're taking pictures, whether it be their cell or with a camera, just to walk around and try to get different angles.
Now, you're also involved in films as well. So would you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I'm a partner with a company called Everfilm Productions, and we make documentaries. We're making some wonderful documentaries about things that matter, maybe like things that were the fabric of our past that we don't want to lose. And so it's just important to me as a producer and a filmmaker to reach out there and find things that are unusual, but, you know, they're going to make a difference.
Do you think we maybe miss some of that, you know, as we're racing around and, you know, life speeds up over, you know, faster and faster, that we miss some of those things, you know, the fabric of our community kind of things?
Yeah, I really do. And I think that's what's sad. Sometimes if we even just look around what Indiana or Indianapolis has to offer, there's so many things from the past that are either changing or they're being overlooked. And there's so many different mysteries and things that you can learn from that. And that's what I truly like, is to try to find something kind of obscure, something different that you can kind of go in there and bring out the goodness of something and that maybe that might make a difference to somebody or some organization.
You know, I've talked with a chef here on the show before about neighborhoods and restaurants and food and farmers markets and how those kind of things all sort of tie together, you know, within the fabric of a neighborhood. You know, and I think those are some of the things that someone, you know, pointing a lens at the community can kind of show us.
Well, I definitely agree on that. Not to bring up the food festival again, but that was something that really, it always opens my eyes, because when I go there and I experience all of the different locally owned or local chefs there's so much that is out there that we don't even realize that's, you know, right here in our own neighborhoods, right here in our own cities, right there. And, you know, sometimes people try to reach for something farther out there, but we have it right here. And that's one of the things I try to do with my Where's Amy column, is I try to go to different events and and bring those, you know, each community or neighborhood has something that you can find, and whether it be through the lens of the, you know, the camera, or just making a documentary, you can find it out there. And I think that's important to really support and help, you know, contribute to keeping locally owned businesses and companies growing and be successful. I'll tell you a little secret. Eons ago, I'm a people person, and I worked for 3 days for Regina at our bistro as a host. And let me tell you, people don't realize that hosting job is really hard, because you have to like get on the computer and mix everybody and everything. But I'll tell you the one thing that what I did find is she is one of the most talented, nicest, fairest person that I could ever say. I give her big kudos. She is so lovely, and her husband is great. And it was so funny though, because when I worked those 3 days for her, I saw how much that she cares about the community and about how everybody that worked there, whether they were a server or they were a hostess or they were in the kitchen, Aaron Kim, they just love their job and they're happy to be there. And that was one of the things that I loved about our bistro. I still do, is that they're community based, and you know that anything that you're eating is coming through love, through what they're making. And I just always laugh, because I would never tell anybody, which I just did, that I worked there for only 3 days, but I just couldn't handle it. It was too much for me. I was cracking up.
See, that's what I wanted to ask you. Why was it only 3 days?
Because I'm not PC great, but anyways, no, it was fun. And I give her the biggest kudos, and anybody when they come in town, I always tell them they need to go there for a wonderful experience. But no, I just, it was just too hard for me to figure it out, to be honest with you. but it sure was fun. And I'll tell you what, she was a great boss. I mean, I even said, hey, look, you know what? I'm so sorry. I feel so bad. You don't even have to pay me. I'll just use this as a learning experience. And sure enough, she said, nope, you're getting a paycheck. Are you sure we can't keep you? And I said, no, I'm so sorry. And so I just consider her a really wonderful person. I'm so proud to have known her and know her.
Oh, that's very cool. So it's neat that you come back around and see you have an experience in a locally owned restaurant. So that's very cool too.
I know, but Jolene, now no one's ever going to hire me. What if I need to be a hostess? I guess I'm not going to get that job.
We've been talking with local photographer and columnist and film producer Amy Pozek of the Where's Amy column for Current Publishing. You can find her work in the current publications for Carmel, Zionsville, Fishersgeist, Noblesville, and Westfield. And you can see her work online at the publication's website and look for her on Facebook as well. People might hear the phrase, oh, you should open a restaurant, but not many people actually do it. Well, the Borrells of Indianapolis are one family that did. When Teresa Borrell lost her salon to a fire, she and her parents decided to expand on the food they made for their annual Fat Tuesday Mardi Gras parties and open a restaurant. So a little over a year ago, Borrell's Cajun and Creole Cookery opened at 86 and Township Line Road in Indianapolis. I sat down with Teresa Borrell and her mom, Becky, recently to hear how the family launched their restaurant.
It started in my parents' home. We would have Fat Tuesday every year in their home. We started with about 25 people, and it grew to about 50 to 60 people. And I used to be a salon owner for 18 years, and my salon caught on fire. So I kind of told my parents after I got over that, let's just try the restaurant and see what happens, because I wasn't scared. And my parents come from a business background also, so they were gung-ho. They were ready to go. So we tried it, and here we are. We're the Borrells.
But now, so tell me what that was like, jumping into the restaurant.
Well, when we decided to do this, I wanted to consult with everyone to make sure that we're going to be all on board. And then I think part going out and finding a location. Location is so important. And when we found this place here in North Willow, I was just ecstatic to walk in and see, this is the restaurant. This is where it's going to be. And it was just like, ah, we're excited. This is great. Yeah.
So it's the whole family working together. That's very cool. So now tell me a little bit about that.
My grandfather's family is from Orleans Parish. My grandfather's Creole. And they moved here to Indianapolis. So we just kind of
decided that we wanted to do this in his honor, and he's no longer here. But he's a Borel. He is the one that started the heritage, and we're trying to carry it on. And he had a little small hotel and a bar in New Orleans. When he was 15, his parents died, and his sister took over. And then his aunt came in and took over that, and he left and went to the service. But we want people to know who we are, why we are. And why we are is because of Arthur John Borel II from Orleans Parish in New Orleans, living on LaSalle Street.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So that's why we're here.
So you have a very authentic background and a real connection to it. So tell me a little bit about launching the restaurant, you know, how it was when you started out.
We kind of went into the concept of we're going to do this like we do our Fat Tuesday party. So we're going to do Fat Tuesday party every day. So that way we wouldn't freak out when we got in here. And it kind of like swung with that. When we first opened, everyone came in. I liked watching from the kitchen and kind of watching the guests enjoying the food. So that's kind of basically what we did. Just our big Fat Tuesday party.
But now tell me how the Fat Tuesday party started.
Well, Fat Tuesday, like you're saying, in our home, and Fat Tuesday in New Orleans, it's a big party. You go out and you just celebrate because the next day is Ash Wednesday. You get your ashes, so you got to get all of the partying out. You want to decide what you want to give up for Lent and do that for 40 days. Get those ashes on your forehead and carry it out for the 40 days. And then after that, you let that Lent go and you're back to what you're doing normally.
So you started, when did you start having a party, and how did it grow? How did it get to be so big?
We started 10 years ago in our home, and it was just like marvelous that we needed to do that. And people come in and they want to ask about, what is Fat Tuesday? What is it all about? And how did you guys start it? And in our home, letting our people know what it was about. And then we started a fun facts on the wall here to let them know what Fat Tuesday, the colors of New Orleans, why the beads are different colors, why there's a Creole, why there's a Cajun, and they are totally different. So we want them to know that. And the colors of the beads, what the beads, faith, justice, and hope is what the beads' colors are meaning. And just a little bit about the fun, why people say New Orleans is so great. It's the food, the blending of the cultures, the blending of the spices. And that's what makes it so wonderful.
And you try to bring that here. So when you started, you know, what was the reaction to people? Did they react well to the food?
Yes, they did. They loved it. They would come in, they'll order their trio, they'll get up and order something else, and then they'll come back for dinner with another group of people, and then the next day the same group would come in again. So yeah, they're receiving it really well.
We were talking about the crawfish, you know. What about when they, you know, do they react well to the crawfish when you do a crawfish boil and that kind of thing?
I love it because it is the whole crawfish. The tentacles, the everything is on that crawfish. And when they see it, they look, because they're thinking that it's already peeled for them. And I said, in New Orleans now, you have to get dirty. You get down and you peel that crawfish with your hands. We have the corn that's inside the boil. There's a potato and an egg. And I'll tell you a secret about this egg. The egg actually takes in the flavors that's in that crawfish. So when you open the shell of that egg, you taste those flavors, and that is so strange, but it is. It really works, and it's excellent. Excellent. One guy said, that's the best egg I've ever had in my life because all the spices are in that egg. It just kind of penetrates into that shell.
You cook, Teresa, right?
Yes.
So what was that like, you know, kind of getting into the rhythm of cooking, you know, at the restaurant?
I love to cook because I love to eat. So every year for the Fat Tuesday, my clients would place their orders for their Fat Tuesday. So I would have to close down on Tuesday just so that I could cook for our party at home and for my clients. But actually, cooking relaxes me. So I'm like relaxed. It's no stress. I love cooking.
Well, that's kind of fun to hear, you know, because in a restaurant kitchen, you know, you think it's, you know, high stress and that sort of thing.
But it's not. And, you know, the thing is, I think what you had to get in the rhythm of making larger quantities, because for 50 people in your home, that's, you've got what your menu is going to be. But to get people in there every day and cooking every day and having amounts, yeah, that was a different for me, but keeping the recipes the same. And making sure that every day they come in is tasting the same. And that's what we love to hear. Your food is wonderful. And I like that. I love to see them in the kitchen. I'm in the kitchen cooking. And to watch them out eating, conversating, and eating their food.
Oh.
Yeah. I love that so much.
We've been talking with Teresa and Becky Borrell of Borrell's Cajun and Creole Cookery. Stay with us for more with the Borrells here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Are over and winter may finally be kicking in, but we're also getting close to Mardi Gras time. Time to let the good times roll, as they say, to celebrate and enjoy some filet gumbo and etouffee before Lent begins on February 10th. So it seemed like just the right time to talk with Teresa Borrell and her mom Becky of Borrell's Cajun and Creole Cookery in Indianapolis. I talked with them recently about how they launched the restaurant, what type of food you'll find there, and about how the restaurant has brought people together. Let's talk just a little bit about the menu here, though, and tell me, you know, what's on the menu and, you know, how it might be different from something that people might already know about.
Okay, we have our seafood gumbo and our chicken and sausage gumbo, and we do separate them for allergy purposes, but you can mix them. And our gumbo is a filet gumbo. We also have red beans and rice. We have crawfish etouffee, jambalaya, Hoppin' John, and on our special, and our chicken Cajun pasta. And then on Fridays, we do shrimp Creole and shrimp and grits.
What's been the reaction to the menu? Has it been positive?
Very positive. The po' boy sandwiches were a little different for people because they would say, shrimp on a sandwich, catfish on a sandwich. But our po' boy sandwiches, they consist of lettuce, tomato, pickle, and Creole sauce. And we have shrimp, oyster, catfish, sausages, the smoked sausage, andouille, and turkey. We have an alligator po' boy, soft shell crab, and for those that are vegetarians, we have a vegetarian tofu. Now, tofu does not have a flavor to it, but we have flavored the tofu. And we actually fry it with lettuce, and it has lettuce, tomato, pickle, and Creole sauce on that sandwich. It is delicious. And not saying it because we make it, but that tofu, you have to really season it because it's spongy and it doesn't have a taste. Ours has a taste.
Well, that's very good.
Yes. Wonderful taste.
So vegetarians confirm it.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Okay. They love it.
And so, you know, when people come in, you know, what can they expect? I mean, it's a very festive environment, so they're going to come in and feel like Mardi Gras already.
Yes, they do. And I want them to come in and feel like we have transported them to New Orleans just for that day that they're here. And when they come in, I expect them to, they want to hear the music. We have the Cajun music playing, the taste of the food, the aroma in the restaurant, the food, and then also just the camaraderie with different people. The thing I love about is someone may be standing in line and they have already been here and they'll ask, have you been here before? Oh, the food is fantastic. And that just brings a smile to my face when they say that. Yeah. And they love the restaurant. And this is the craziest thing though, but they always give compliments on our bathrooms.
Yes, they do.
now you have to tell me why you get the compliments on the bathroom.
They're decorated, but you have to go in there and see. They're beautiful. And the men's restroom and the women's restroom, I like when I see the men go in there and they come back out. It says men on the door, but they'll ask, is this the men's bathroom? Yes, it is.
Maybe they're not used to having such a nice restroom.
And that's what we wanted to make them have. Yes, that is so true. We also have, we have a changing table in there for them, for they can change their babies. One guy says, I'm coming back and changing my baby in that bathroom. I thought, okay.
Oh my goodness. So what's been like maybe the best part of having such a family run business? You know, are there pluses and minuses? Are there negatives to that too?
Yes, it is. Because when we decide that we, I have to laugh about that. Because you would think, oh, it's so wonderful. No, it's not. Because we'll argue about what's going on the menu or what have you done. And just true facts, because you're family. And you want to make sure that things are correct. But everybody has their opinion, and to make sure that it's going to go right. So somebody has to give and somebody's got to take so that we can all be on the same page. But other than that, yeah, it's great. And I love it. I wouldn't take it for anything. I have never worked with my girls, and I love it. We've always had our own separate jobs, but now we're here together. I just love it. I love it.
Well, that's nice. What do you think? What's it like working with your folks?
I love it. It's fun. We can come in, and instead of, like, us having to see each other on the weekends or on Sunday, we get to see each other every day and catch up and clown around in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. I like when the guests look in there at us because they say, well, you guys look like you're having fun in there. And we are.
Mm-hmm. Well, that, I think that makes a difference for the environment too, because if they think you're having fun, then it kind of sets a nice tone, mm-hmm. you know?
Yes, it does.
Now, what would you like people to know about the food itself? You know, and maybe, you know, its level of spice or the type of dishes that you have. You know, is it a little out of the ordinary? Maybe, you know, different than what maybe they're used to.
It's not overwhelmingly spicy. It's mm-hmm. flavorful. So you can taste all the flavors. Like when you're eating the Hoppin' John, I have 10 different spices in it, and you can taste that in your mouth. And I've had chefs come in and compliment me on the Hoppin' John and on the dirty rice. So it's not overwhelmingly spicy where you're going to cough or choke or anything or need water. It's just flavorful. So the flavors kind of dance around in your mouth. And our food is made with love.
Mm-hmm. And also, in New Orleans, a lot of the dishes that we have that are spicy dishes, they would not be able to eat it there because it is overly whirling spicy. So here, I want them to have the adventure of thinking they are in New Orleans and getting the traditional food, which we do cook, but I didn't add a lot of the spice like we would in New Orleans because Northerners would not be able to take that. A lot of people are very spice sensitive and hot spice. So we didn't want to do that. So we do leave hot sauce on there, on the tables for them, flaming hot, if they want to do that. But we do have some of the spices in there, but it's not a lot that would overwhelm and make them sick.
Now, tell me just a little bit more about where you're located. You're at 86 and Township Line, mm-hmm. right?
We're in North Willow, and we're on the very end of the Fresh Time Market. We're on the east end of Fresh Time Market. And just love it. We're near Athens Greek Restaurant here, and the place is just wonderful. We just love for people to come in the first time and see how it looks and tell us, oh, this looks like New Orleans. Yeah.
Well, now tell me a little bit about the decorations that you mentioned. You know, and having some students, nearby students, do that.
Yes, we wanted to have the community incorporated in our restaurant. So we asked Brebeuf High School if they had art students, if they could come over and look at the wall and see if they could do a drawing for us. And I told them the only stipulation was they could have Carte Blanche, but I want them to be able to do the balconies in New Orleans because they are so famous for their balconies. And Anne-Marie Meyer, she said, yes, I can do that. And she brought her other staff with her. And it came out so beautiful. It really looks nice. I'm so pleased with those guys. Aww. Very much so. Aww. They come in every now and then and eat. Anne-Marie is in college now. She's in art school in Cincinnati, I think. And Bennett is at Syracuse, but we still have Kurt. that comes over from Brebeuf. He's a senior, and he brings his friends in and says, look what I did.
They all do. They show them, look what I did. Aww. And their names are on the wall. They did sign it.
They signed their work.
We've been talking with Teresa and Becky Borrell of Borrell's Cajun and Creole Cookery in Indianapolis. For more information, go to borrellscajunrestaurant.com. All of our talk this week about chefs and restaurants, I have to point out that Devour Downtown starts Monday, January 25th. It's the 11th annual restaurant event, and you'll find special prices on three-course meals at 90 local restaurants through Sunday, February the 7th. So just ask for the Devour Downtown menu, which is a great way to try a new place or to revisit an old favorite restaurant. You can go online at devourdowntown.org to read the menus in advance and settle on something to try. So new to the lineup this year are Bangkok Restaurant and Jazz Bar, Gandolfo's New York Deli, Hoagies and Hops, Ike and Jonesy's Marrow, Punch Burger, Repeal, and The Tap. Also new this year is the Diner of the Day promotion. So during the two-week event, diners can share their Devour experiences on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram with the Devour Indie hashtag for the chance to win a $30 gift card to one of the participating restaurants. And watch the Eat Drink Indie Facebook page for gift card giveaways as well. So for more information, you can check out devourdowntown.org and the Devour Downtown Facebook page, Instagram, and Twitter posts as well. And don't forget that other restaurants might have specials this time of year as well. I checked out the Loft restaurant at Trader's Point Creamery recently to try their Winter in the Woods prefix menu and enjoyed a terrific meal in a beautiful setting. So it's a great time to check out a new menu and support our local chefs and restaurants as well. You've been listening to Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. Thank you so much for tuning in this week, and thanks also to our guests, Dean Sample, executive chef at Meridian Restaurant and Bar in Indianapolis, Amy Pozak, photographer and columnist of Where's Amy with Current Publications, and Becky and Teresa Borrell of Borrell's Cajun and Creole Cookery in Indianapolis. And thanks also to producer John Ketzenberger for helping to bring you Eat Drink Indiana Radio.